Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and advice for other veterans who want to do the same. Today's episode number 157 with Rob Shank.
That was one of the great things about AOL too, was just the networking. So I got to work with such a who's who list in the personal finance and investing space, and you can kind of see who the winners were, who the people were shaking out towards the top. And E-Trade, who I'd first met when they were a tiny little concern in this California Avenue office in Palo Alto. I mean, they were, their server closet was literally in a closet when I met them the first time. And fast forward a few years, they became this behemoth who was advertising on the Super Bowl and had really kind of grown into this very formidable firm.
This is such an exceptional interview for really veterans interested in any career path. Rob's got such a wide range of experience, but he started his career as the 500th employee at AOL, very early stage technology, before it grew to over 10,000 people. And he talks about what it's like to be part of a rocket ship, how he got his foot in the door by applying to be a customer support specialist, as well as his career at E-Trade, where he basically did the same thing of joining a really high growth startup. He talks about not going for the easy thing and taking risks in your career. He talks about being part of this revolution, both at E-Trade and AOL. They did the first stock trade online ever while he was there. Just an exciting time to be in this ecosystem. He talks about getting into a startup, things that veterans should avoid. He talks about failure and taking risks, and then also major changes where after this, you know, 10 to 15 year period in high technology, how he started to pursue more of his personal passions and where he could have more autonomy and direct impact on an organization. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes, you'll find a text transcript of our conversation, other resources as well. You'll also find an offer for audible.com, which is giving a free audiobook of your choice to Beyond the Uniform listeners. One of the books that Rob recommends is Phil Knight's Shoe Dog. I plus one that recommendation. A great book to do while running on audiobook, so check out that offer. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Rob Shank. Joining me today in Alexandria, Virginia, is Rob Shank. Rob, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you, Justin. Happy to be on.
I wanted to give a special thanks to one of my advisors from Storybox who's been with me for 8 years, Bill Ustra. Bill had recommended Rob to the show. They knew each other from their time at AOL. I wanted to give a very brief, abbreviated background for Rob. He's had quite an impressive background, but he is currently the Senior Vice President for Visitor Engagement at George Washington's Mount Vernon. Originally from the San Francisco Bay Area, Rob graduated from the University of California at Berkeley. After graduating from Aviation Officers Candidate School and Intel School, Rob joined Strike Fighter Squadron 147, the Argonauts, as their strike intelligence officer, where he deployed to the Far East and Persian Gulf on board the USS Nimitz. Days after leaving the Navy, Rob joined a then relatively small company called America Online, where he rose through the ranks to become the vice president of AOL's personal finance channel. After leaving AOL, Rob joined E-Trade Financial, where he eventually rose to manage all the online banking services and cash management products. Rob left E-Trade to join the Civil War Trust as their first director of internet strategy and development. He holds a Master's of Arts in National Security Studies from Georgetown University and currently lives in Alexandria, Virginia. And his son is currently a second-class midshipman at the United States Naval Academy. Maybe to start things off, Rob, I'd love to hear about how big AOL was at the time when you first joined them.
Yeah, it was actually in February of 94, and it was pretty small. I would say there were maybe 500 employees, and most of those were call center service types. So maybe 100 folks in software development, business, and marketing. So really small. It was back in the day where AOL was in Tyson's Corner before they moved out to their big headquarters in Dulles.
I'm just wondering, how did you – I feel like I was so unaware of the tech scene – when I was on active duty, and I'm picturing when you were getting out, how did you even find out about AOL? And then, you know, Bill Ustred shared with me that you had a pretty interesting story about how you managed to get your foot in the door and get that first job.
Absolutely. Well, I have long had an interest in personal computers, and really throughout the 80s and early 90s had owned personal computers. And it was the time in which online services first started to come on the scene. So the CompuServes and the Prodigies, and in this case for me, America Online. So you'd fire up your modem and it would connect you to this fantastic world of growing information. And I just was really enamored with this. Being kind of an intelligence officer, information was kind of in my blood. And just to see how personal computers were becoming more than just something to set on your desktop was really exciting. I think in AOL's case, I also realized that they were in my backyard. I was my last tour of duty was in the Washington, D.C. area. I was thinking about what I was going to do after the Navy, and at first had decided not to go into another government job. So this was kind of fitting a lot of bills. But I had very little sense over what sort of jobs they had. I probably realized they had a CEO, they had software developers, which I wasn't going to be. And then they also were advertising for call center people. So not knowing how else to approach them, I decided to apply for one of these call center positions.
You must have been the most overly qualified call center application they ever got.
Well, I went into the interview, and the interviewer kind of paused like about 10 minutes into the interview and kind of almost held up his hand. And I got the sense like either I had done something horribly wrong, or as he let me know, that he wanted to send my resume into America Online and to other groups that I had no knowledge or awareness of. So it was really fortuitous that my resume then landed on the desk of Catherine Borsnick, who was both Bill Ustra and my boss early on at AOL. And Catherine brought me in and hired me as the first employee in this brand new AOL personal finance channel.
And one of the things I admire and respect about your story is I know from this is, you know, over 150 of these interviews I've done now, it's very often challenging for people to go from active duty and take a pretty big step back in terms of managing people, in terms of their role, and also in terms of their pay. But I admire your willingness to just roll up your sleeves and be willing to do whatever it takes to get your foot in the door, even something that's, I'm imagining, a fraction of the pay and a fraction of the seniority. And I love that that led then to this incredible opportunity.
I remember I took the job. It was, far less than what I was being paid as a Navy lieutenant. And they gave me these stock options, which I had no idea what those were for, or how those were going to be valued. I later found out quite a lot. And so it really was, as a young person, willing to take risks. I guess the one thing I'll kind of applaud myself for was not going for the easy thing. I kind of went for this risky position. And honestly, I remember joining AOL and thinking that it might be around for a year or two. It would be fantastic fun before I went on to business school and got really serious about my post-military career. But as the story unfolds, AOL kind of grew into a behemoth quite quickly, and it was a very interesting experience kind of going along with them as they grew into this large company.
Do you have any advice for people who are on active duty who are listening who may be hesitant to take that risk and hesitant to really go for something that's not as easy as their first job out of the military?
Oh, man. I do recommend to, you know, particularly younger folks who, have a lot of energy and a lot of resilience, if you will, to definitely take those risks. They're much harder to do later in life when you've got a family or kids or other obligations. When you're young and carefree and you can kind of, you know, eat ramen day after day, those are the times in which you really should be kind of swinging for the fences. And so to me, AOL was my kind of risk that I took, and it really did pay off. And if it didn't, no problem. I would have moved on to something different. And certainly being a young person, you'd have time and energy to do that.
And I want to hear kind of about the roles that you did, and especially what it was like to be part of such a big rocket ship. But another thing I just wanted to ask about was, in that first year that you were there, What do you remember being some of the strengths that you carried with you from the military that helped you, but also what were some of those areas that you really had to put in double the effort to fill out a skill that was missing or a mindset or something that was missing that you didn't get in the military?
It's a great question. And, you know, one of the attractive things about America Online, and you can certainly say this about any new industry, is that there weren't a lot of people around who had a lot of experience. I wasn't encountering people who had been there 10 years or had mastered all the difficult arts that went with it. So I felt that as long as I applied myself and I was willing to learn and I would show up reliably, that I could just sponge up all this great information and hopefully stay in the game. I remember that, you know, feeling that way. And it was an exciting environment, very entrepreneurial, very can do. And I sat down, they gave me this Stratus terminal, this kind of proprietary terminal. I learned AOL's proprietary programming language called Rain Man. And I was then able to interface with all sorts of different financial services firms, personal finance firms, and create some of their very first interactive offerings. Many of these entities have gone on and are still, you know, I think, kind of really powerful within the personal finance space today. So players like The Motley Fool. I got to work with Jim Cramer, who you can see on CNBC all the time. I got to work with financial firms like E-Trade and others. It was a really great experience. And just, again, because it was new and I was able to apply myself, I was able to be useful right from the get-go.
That's incredible. So what was it like in terms of the work that you were doing, but also just being, I just can't even imagine you were at the epicenter of what is now commonplace, but it must have been to be at a high growth startup like that in any time must be exhilarating, but especially at that time, the world hadn't really seen anything like this before. So what was that like?
No. It was really fantastic. And I guess you didn't even half realize what was going on. It was growing so quickly. And AOL was really at the forefront of the whole kind of consumer internet space, even though it wasn't even technically the internet at the start. But really connecting people to online services and online information, the first stock trades, online banking, stock quotes, so much. It was just a true revolution in terms of the information and services that people now take for granted, by and large. It was fascinating to be at AOL because they dealt in all sorts of subjects, and you were able to kind of quickly see which ones were working better than others, which ones had a lot of market potential. It was a great time. And I think, you know, we got to work with a lot of really sharp, you know, smart, creative people. And I think that's one thing that became very important was to be creative, to kind of really try things out, to really analyze what was working and what wasn't. It was a giant laboratory that you could see techniques and learn best practices very quickly.
Mm. Yeah, I just imagine, you know, that old analogy of drinking from a fire hose. It's just, I can only imagine you're building this rocket ship as it soars through the air, and so you're just having to learn and experiment. And there's no, I imagine there's no guide map to take you through it. So you're having to create that and do it through trial and error and through, you know, failure and learning.
But that was great. And I think that was part of what gave me the opportunity to be successful. I was not working with people who had vastly more experience. And I felt like if I kept showing up and I was tenacious and I kept learning and I kept applying myself, that I would be useful and beneficial to the whole process.
I know the landscape has changed since then, but I'm curious. I know that so many people who listen to this show, they aspire to go from active duty to a technology company or to a high growth startup. Do you have any advice for them about how to prepare for that as a career path or how to find the right company or just any thoughts to someone who's approaching this for the very first time?
I do. And I think that, you know, I've encountered many great recent veterans who have entered the different companies I've worked for. And I think that one of the challenges, and I certainly face this myself, is that the military trains you to speak in a certain way. And I find that a lot of veterans can use a lot of acronyms that to someone outside of the military can be very mystifying. And so I think it's very important for a lot of veterans to kind of think about how they speak. And I think they need to learn or even retrain themselves to how to speak and describe their professional military experiences in ways that a non-military person could understand. And so I think, you know, look at your resume, practice describing kind of all the things you did without using 3 or 4 or 7-letter acronyms. I think that that's really important. I think I'd also recommend to military folks is really kind of read up on the space. And there's, you know, thanks to the internet, so much information that is available in the sectors of interest. And I would say there's no reason you can't subscribe to the newsletters or read the blogs or figure out what others are reading. I think even LinkedIn can be a portal towards figuring out what other people in those industries are connecting to and reading. There's no reason that a well-motivated military person can't find a lot of that information and amass a great deal of useful information that would be impressive to any company.
I love that. And I echo that sentiment. I love that first part that so often that's come up on the show is the need to translate their experience. And it's surprising because I think that veterans have some of the best and most compelling stories available. And I think that on average, you know, your typical veteran is also a great storyteller, but it's bringing that skill set into an interview of being able to tell compelling stories that illustrate, you know, traits that they have and skills they've acquired while ditching all of the jargon and all of the acronyms that make it very difficult for an outsider to understand that story. And I also love that that second piece as well. I think those are both spot on.
Absolutely. Yeah, Justin, I think that, you know, it's interesting. I've had many great experiences both in the military and in different businesses, but I am asked more times than not about my Navy days than anything. And I've had the chance to practice my sea stories, and they're getting better and better and crazier with every passing year. And so you'll have that opportunity too. And I think that people will be fascinated and highly appreciative of all those amazing things that you've done in the military. But just learn how to kind of tell that story in a way that a non-military person can really relate to it.
And you know, to that second point, I think it's such an exciting time for someone to be on active duty if they're thinking about switching, in that they're, like you said, LinkedIn, you can literally see, if you want to go into finance, you can see the articles that people in the finance industry are posting. You can listen to a finance podcast and start to get that lingo and that terminology. And all of these things can be done under an ocean or on deployment somewhere far away. You know, you can download it in advance. So I love that thought of just really doing your research and getting up to speed.
Absolutely. Again, when I was in the Navy, I remember being in the Arabian Sea on the USS Nimitz, and there wasn't any internet. There wasn't any connectivity. And it was so much harder to kind of stay connected to these worlds back home. But today, there's so many more opportunities to do so.
And it seems like when you were at AOL, you started initially working with finance. And did you stay in that? And kind of how did you try to navigate once you were in AOL, where to go with that?
You know, after a while, I was given some responsibilities in other subject areas. So I did work a little bit in travel and in computing and other areas. But I kept coming back to finance, and for good reason, because going back to that analogy I made about a laboratory and seeing how different subjects are working, it was very clear early on that personal finance, investing, and banking was a huge winner in the internet space. It was largely dealing in real-time data information. It was dealing in money. It was dealing in non-physical product. And all those things, particularly coupled with the internet stock boom that was happening at the same time in the 90s, just made that a really hot area to be in.
So how did you know, could you talk a little bit about the time at which you moved on from AOL? What was going on at the time? And also how you knew it was time to switch on to E-Trade?
Yeah, you know, so as I said, when I joined AOL back in early 94, it was about 500 people. Fast forward to the year 2000, it's about 10,000 people. So it had just grown enormously. And what was kind of a very simple entrepreneurial, almost Silicon Valley-like enterprise early on had grown to be much more bureaucratic and slow. But maybe more worrisome, and what really kind of became decisive to me, it was overly confident. Its success had bred this degree of confidence. And if you've ever read the great book, The Innovator's Dilemma, AOL would strike me as a case study for that book. Its success had bred a belief that they knew better than others. The problem was that this thing called HTML and the internet had arrived. It was open source and available, and it wasn't controlled by one domineering company. And so it didn't take a scientist to realize that this open platform was eventually going to succeed where our proprietary platform was going to lag. My frustration over AOL's decision not to kind of get more into HTML and the open standards was really the primary reason why I left. And it was only my good fortune that I left kind of just before some terrible things happened to AOL in terms of its stock price and in terms of the popping of the internet bubble.
So that's what I, you know, from an external perspective, it seems like you had gotten out just in time, which is uncanny. That's just unreal. Right at the height, it seems like, is when you were able to leave before this whole bubble burst and things shifted momentarily.
It was very good timing on my part, but not for the reason that I had the type of market insight that you might think I had. Now, I will truly admit to you, Justin, I went right from the frying pan right into the fire. Mm-hmm. So I went from AOL ultimately to E-Trade and worked at E-Trade out in Menlo Park, California. And I joined E-Trade in August of 2001. So again, for those historians there, that's 1 month just before 9/11. And 9/11 brought on further reduction of the internet space, but also even worse for E-Trade, kind of a complete knockdown in terms of stock trading. So I went from kind of avoiding one crisis and jumping right into a new one. And so that presented a whole new set of market challenges to surmount there in the early 2000s.
And I'm assuming, you know, you had mentioned earlier the types of people and companies you were working with. I'm assuming that in your role as vice president of personal finance channel, you had interactions with E-Trade. You got to know their team, got to know their value proposition, and that's what led to the transition. Was it that straightforward that you kind of developed this relationship and then decided to switch over? Or how did that
That was one of the great things about AOL, too, was just the networking. So I got to work with such a who's who list in the personal finance and investing space. And you can kind of see who the winners were, who the people were shaking out towards the top. And E-Trade, who I'd first met when they were a tiny little concern in this California Avenue office in Palo Alto. I mean, they were their server closet was literally in a closet when I met them the first time. And fast forward a few years, they became this behemoth who was advertising on the Super Bowl and had really kind of grown into this very formidable firm. It was just very impressive. And so I think when I was thinking about where to transition to next, and I did want to move back to California from Virginia, E-Trade was one of the first firms I reached out to, and fortunately I had a chance to work for them as well.
And how big were they when you joined?
Well, they were pretty large, so they had grown very quickly. So I can't remember the number of employees, but this was really one of the leading online trading firms at a time in which online trading firms were some of the most celebrated entities on the internet.
Did you? I'm just curious, you know, because you had this path where you joined a relatively small startup that goes, you know, increases in size by orders of magnitude. How did you kind of approach the thought of, was there a temptation to try to jump back into the trenches and go into something smaller? Or did, from the scale of AOL, did you know, like, hey, I want to be part of this bigger organization?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I should say that there actually was, between AOL and E-Trade, there was another job that I had, so it was very brief, and if we want to talk about failures, this would be probably my lead one. So I went to work for a firm called Good in Silicon Valley, and Good was initially in the mobile space. They were, this was before there really was iPhones or even Blackberries initially, but they wanted to create kind of a corporate messaging platform. And that was a very interesting space to be in for a very brief time, but that just proved to not be a good space for me and my experience level. So I left there a little chastened, but ready to jump into something next. So E-Trade, even though it was a larger firm, when I first met them, didn't feel like a large firm. It still felt like it was kind of an athletic, entrepreneurial, aggressive type of outfit. So I think those were the things I was really after. And I think the things that has always been attracted to me are the ability to create the opportunity to kind of do something innovative.
Mm. I appreciate your sharing about that failure with good as well. It's something that really has come up a lot on the show, is the relative risk aversion of people in the military and a very, very, you know, understandably harsh view towards failure. And then on the flip side, especially in technology and startups where failure is part of the formula, it can be a very jarring transition. And so it's always helpful to hear. I'm just putting myself in your shoes coming from AOL. I've got to be feeling like I'm bulletproof, like I am like unstoppable. And then to have that immediately followed up by realizing this is not the right fit or not my right skill set. I imagine that's, you know, takes some getting used to before moving on to E-Trade and trying something again.
Well, it did. And I know that there, it's kind of in vogue in entrepreneurial circles to celebrate failure. So, you know, you hear that all the time. You got to fail. You got to fail fast. You got to fail big. I get that. I understand what they're saying. But you know, there's a certain human personal toll that comes with failure, too. And it's not as easy to swallow, particularly when you're really vested in the enterprise at hand. But, you know, as I said, I think particularly when you're younger, you know, taking risk and trying things out can have huge benefits for you downfield. And, you know, when you're older and you're less flexible and you're unable to kind of take those risks, you'll wish you probably had. And so that's why I always tell people that if you've got that in your mix, particularly being a military person, I think you're kind of accustomed to maybe more Spartan lifestyles in certain ways. Go for it. Give it a shot. You know, don't be fearful. I think that, you know, military people oftentimes bring the type of discipline and focus that's necessary and desirable in a lot of these entrepreneurial firms.
And I want to learn about your experience at E-Trade, but I'm just curious, as you think of AOL and E-Trade, could you talk about, I know so many listeners are always curious about the nitty-gritty and granular detail of what life was like. And can you just paint a picture of what sort of hours were you working? Were you working on the weekends? Did you have any personal life? What was it like being in part of such high-growth startups?
Well, I would say at both AOL and E-Trade, they were pretty aggressive work environments. There was you were always super busy. You were always checking emails. And I would say that you know, this is at a time where I've got a wife and I've got two young kids, and so there's a lot of pressures also on the home front, that was becoming a growing challenge for me. I can tell you when I worked at E-Trade, I would regularly come home late and have dinner after my family had dinner, and that was, you know, a challenge. It was just also kind of just this all-encompassing sort of experience. And it was great, and believe me, there were many great aspects for it. But it was also, in the end, after I think 13, 14 years of that kind of hard-charging lifestyle, that I did kind of come to the conclusion that I wanted to make a shift, and we can talk about that. But, you know, both E-Trade and AOL were go-go places, and I liked that. I sought that out. I wanted that, and I expected that from others. I think what I've learned over time is that to remain creative and to remain innovative, which are both highly prized at organizations like this, if you become burned out and can't keep running the race at a reasonable pace, then you haven't done anyone any favors. And so I think that there's this notion of being an endurance athlete as well, which is important to consider over the long term.
I love that. I think that's such a fantastic analogy. Could you share a little bit more about what was the work that you were doing at E-Trade and kind of what activities, what type of team you were working with, just painting that picture of what that was like?
You know, I was first hired at E-Trade. E-Trade was going through a phase where they had started to acquire other financial service products, so banking and insurance, loans, et cetera, and they wanted to knit those together into one unified experience. So my first job was to kind of do that and do that from a front-end web design point of view. So I worked very closely with E-Trade's really talented software engineers and worked with our design team to really kind of create that. And I would say E-Trade really had an early lead in terms of creating that sort of integrated experience where all these different financial service products worked pretty well together. Interesting enough, I was then kind of tapped on the shoulder and asked whether I wanted to take over E-Trade's online banking and cash management business. I was in Menlo Park, California. That job was in Arlington, Virginia, which is kind of where I had just come from. My wife's from Virginia, so I took that opportunity even after I told my boss at the time that I had really almost zero experience running online banks or banking. And so I can remember he told me that at the time he just needed to be able to do some basic math, Rob, and he'd be fine. I kind of didn't believe him at the time. And it was kind of an interesting challenge, but it was fun. I got to move right into an online banking space that in the early 2000s was really also going through its own renaissance and growth vector. Many of the online banking services that you know and appreciate today were really being developed at that time. And I had a great time really kind of creating what I felt was an improved online banking experience. It was also a great business challenge and a lot of fun. We got to grow E-Trade's banking deposits, I think, from like about $7 billion to almost $40 billion by the time I left.
Man. Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask about is, you know, in looking at your story, I feel like at this point it's like AOL and E-Trade, and the next move surprised me. And I suspect, based on what you've said, I can only imagine the hours and the rigor of your career up until that point. But could you talk about that transition to the Civil War Trust and how that came about?
Yeah. So really, as I hinted before, you know, my days at AOL and my days at E-Trade were fantastic and wonderful. And I got to work with some really, truly remarkable people and do some wonderful things. But I could tell it was taking a pretty big toll. Certainly, you know, I try to put family above all, but that had become difficult to do. Both success at AOL and E-Trade had positioned me in a better financial position. And I felt that I was at this point in my life where I could consider other passions. I still wanted to do the internet thing. I still wanted to kind of be involved in creative pursuits, but I kept daydreaming at first and then seriously thinking about could I mate those professional skills and interests to my personal interests. And from my very earliest days, I've always loved history. The first books I ever pulled out of the library in elementary school were all history books, and I consumed them and loved them. When I came back to D.C. as part of the Navy, and all of a sudden, you know, sites associated with the American Revolution and the Civil War and others were all around me, those passions were inflamed. And I had started supporting a group called the Civil War Trust, which was a outfit that purchased and preserved Civil War battlefields, which there are many all around that I had started to visit out here in Virginia. And I loved their mission. They were a really can-do, highly accomplished outfit that had just about one of the worst websites you could ever find. And I remember thinking, God, if they only let me redo their website, they'd be in such a better place in terms of reach and fundraising, et cetera. I essentially made that pitch to them, which I think caught them really off guard. In fact, I think they thought I was gaming them in some sort of strange way, but I told them I was sincere that I wanted to come, and I thought it would be for a year or two. It was honestly my thinking. I wanted to just kind of roll up my sleeves and take a subject I really loved and just apply all of my creativity and energy and experience to doing it. Mm-hmm. That ended up being, you know, a much longer gig, and I'm grateful for it because it totally recharged me. It was a small entrepreneurial can-do organization. Yes, it was different and it was on a different scale, but it gave me the chance to dabble and delve into all sorts of web technologies and web platforms and web capabilities that in a larger organization I may have never had a chance to touch, or they would have been in some other division or some other group. And so I really look back on those days and, you know, even though, again, as I said, we're talking about a different scale, I was really able to grow their digital presence, their online fundraising grew dramatically, their reach just soared, their ability to project, you know, as a much larger, more professional outfit was improved. And so I'm very proud of that work, and it was a really interesting step that I'm glad it worked out.
That sounds incredible. And, you know, that just sparks a question for me, which is this thought of, because it sounds like it's so clear, and when you talk about this, how passionate you are and how aligned this is with your personal interests. And one question I wanted to ask you just off the cuff is, especially for someone on active duty, this thought of following your passion versus not following your passion. And on the one hand, I've had on the show author Cal Newport, who wrote a great book called So Good They Can't Ignore You, where he says follow your passion is the worst advice you can give someone and sets up unrealistic expectations. And then I've also read a lot of Gary Vaynerchuk, and we've talked about that on the show before, and his premise is definitely go for where you're passionate. And having been in an area where, you know, my sense is that this second half of your career has been more centered around personal fulfillment and passion, and the first half was maybe not. That's just an interpretation. Do you have any advice on where a veteran might think about, you know, pursuing something that they're directly interested in versus going for something that might not be 100% aligned with their interests?
Well, I guess it all depends where your passions are. So if your passions are, you know, Bitcoin or biotechnology, go at it, man. So for me, mine tended to be a lot less, you know, a lot harder to monetize, let's put it that way.
Yep.
For me, you know, I was passionate about AOL. I was passionate about E-Trade. So I don't want to give you the sense otherwise. They held great sway and interest. And there were moments at both of those that I just was just delighted to show up every day and work really hard and long hours. But there became a very strong practical aspect to both of them. And they both were entities and corporations that you know, compensated me well. And so without those successes, I may never have indulged in this transfer that's hard to explain to most people. But as I said, I found myself at a point where really I had that flexibility, and I thought, you know, I'm getting to an age where, you know, do I just kind of ride out? Do I just kind of stay with the horse I'm on, or do I really kind of engage in these other areas of interest? So, you know, as much as moving to AOL was a risk, moving to the Civil War Trust was as well. And so that was a change for me that really did pay off. As I said, it wasn't really a financial payoff, but in terms of my creativity, in terms of what I was able to do, get my hands dirty once again and do it in categories that I really cared about, proved to be a really important step.
That's great. Yeah, I know Cal Newport talks about that kind of in the sense of building up career capital and, you know, what you did in your time at AOL and E-Trade. And then you're able to, if you'd like, cash in that career capital for more autonomy. And it sounds like you've had more creative control and creative expression in these roles. And a lot of that was made possible through the career and financial capital that you built up earlier in your career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, so, you know, I think back to your point, Justin, I think you could stunt yourself if you pursue passions without some sort of thought as to your career. And you can also stunt yourself by just pursuing career elements without kind of thinking about what your passions are. So it's probably some sort of careful mixture of the two. And I hope that all veterans have an opportunity to do that. But, you know, as I said, not every job or role in the military was fun. There were many times in which, you know, I had midnight watch or, you know, was far from home. And, you know, there's a certain notion, and I think military people are comfortable, that they have to sacrifice for the greater good. And I think that there's a personal sense of that, too.
Could you share just a little bit about your current work now at Mount Vernon?
Yes. So after being at the Civil War Trust and kind of really establishing myself more in a nonprofit capacity, I was asked as to whether I would be interested in doing something similar for George Washington's Mount Vernon. So just kind of down the road, another place that I had great admiration for. Mount Vernon was a little more celebrated in the Civil War Trust in a lot of ways. And so I thought that would be an interesting challenge. Like the Civil War Trust, Mount Vernon had built a tremendous reputation in many categories, but was really backwards digitally. And so I guess I was kind of attracted to that, and that another subject, you know, I kind of moved back 100 years, and it was fun just kind of taking a lot of that learning from the Civil War Trust and applying it to Mount Vernon. So I first started as the vice president of new media, the first person in Mount Vernon's history to have that title and role. And that was another just tremendous period of creativity and activity. And then I was asked pretty shortly after that to take on other responsibilities. So my current title, Senior Vice President for Visitor Engagement, gives me oversight of all of our guest experience and guest services teams, which help to kind of welcome and serve the interests of our million plus guests a year. But I also have our marketing team and our new media team, which allows me to kind of also work towards promoting and making people aware of Mount Vernon, and also kind of the educational mission that's just so important to us.
Is there, I know we've only got a little bit of time left here, but some of the questions I just wanted to ask you really quickly was, one of the top ones on my mind is that so many of the people who are on active duty who listen to this show, they're trying to figure out what they're going to do when they get out of the military. And I know this will apply to your son as well, whether he serves for 5 years or 30 years, they're going to have an eventual civilian career. Do you have any advice for people on active duty about different ways to go about figuring out what they might like and might enjoy in that second career?
I mean, it's a really good question, Justin. I'm not certain I have the greatest of answers. I mean, for me, I was fortunate that I kind of stepped right from the military into something that was so interesting to me and kind of allowed me to move from there. I would imagine, though, that again, you know, through the power of the internet, you have the ability to kind of sample and look at lots of different industries and to really kind of understand what is required of in those places. So I would just say that, you know, it's probably worth checking out a few of those industries of interest and trying to learn as much as you can about them. You know, if you have the ability to speak with people who work at those companies, I'm sure a lot of those folks are fascinated by veterans and want to speak to you as well. So there's no reason you can't do informational interviews or kind of reach out to people just to understand what do those opportunities look like.
That's great. Is there are there any resources you would recommend? I know earlier you'd recommended LinkedIn, you'd recommended Innovator's Dilemma. Any other books or resources that have helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to veterans listening?
Well, right. Well, other than kind of industry information and materials, I know that I've mentioned that several times here. You know, there are other books, and I'll tell you one that I really love, and it's one I wish I read or had access to when I was much younger. So it's a book that came out, I think, last year or 2 years ago called Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. So he's the founder of Nike. And it's a great story. And I don't know, Justin, if you've read it or not, but I always recommend it to folks.
I love that. I did the audio version, and I listened to probably 95% of it while running. And it is such a great book to run to. I really love and admire Phil Knight's candor and honesty. And you just see, I felt a lot of vulnerability in that book, and it seemed like a very accurate depiction of how fearful and how crazy and intimidating it can be to build a startup like that. It was not an overnight success or easy at any point in that story.
Then you and I love exactly the same things about that book. And I think that's an important lesson to learn, that it's not, you know, your life and your career won't be so linear. It's you may have a plan A. I had a plan A I never got back to after year one. You know, enjoy the ride and realize that the ride isn't kind of always just straight up or straight down, that it has kind of these peaks and valleys, and kind of that tenacity in that book the ability to kind of, you know, fight to the bitter end, to really kind of pursue the larger challenges, to not give up, are all just so empowering and ennobling. And I think for those that are kind of interested in more of the entrepreneurial path, I think that's a fantastic book to consider. And then consider what Phil Knight was able to achieve. So I think that that's a great story to read. And it's also just something that just reads really well. It's not your classic business book.
I'm just wondering from your own experience and maybe from veterans you've interacted with throughout the years, do you have any sense of common misconceptions that people have? You know, they're in the military, they're doing one thing, and then they have this thought of what their civilian life or career will look like, but very often they don't have that right. Do you have a sense from your own story or from people you've interacted with over the years of what some of those misconceptions might be?
Yeah, I was thinking about this, Justin, and I think I don't know if I had this or not, but I can think it's kind of a stereotype that sometimes is out there that military people are the disciplined people, that they're motivated people, and that civilians or people you might find in kind of regular businesses tend to be a lot less so. And what's interesting is I found working at AOL and E-Trade, I worked with some really tremendous people, people who were just as disciplined, just as motivated, just as hardworking as you might encounter in the best of the military. They just didn't have that same military experience. And so I think I learned to kind of hold a lot of my colleagues in high regard. You mentioned Bill Ustra, who was someone who I worked with closely at AOL and was great to work with and fun and just super talented and hardworking. You're going to find a lot of those people. So be humble. You know, being in the military doesn't mean you have a monopoly of some of the traits and skills that sometimes are reported by others.
I think that's such great advice. One of the early interviews I did was with a guy, Britt Smith, at Palantir. And the line that he said, that, you know, it's over a year ago that stuck with me, is he said, you know, it's not like while we were in the military, these other people were just sitting around playing Lincoln Logs. They were working just as hard as we were in the military, but in that civilian field that they're experts at. And I feel like, you know, for those listening, whether they agree with that or not, whether they agree with the thought that, you know, these people are working just as hard as you, it's definitely the beneficial mindset to take on, where the people you're going to be working with and interviewing against and really coming up against are very just as diligent and capable as you are. And I think that sometimes we do a disservice to those on active duty by saying this message of, you know, you're going to get out and everything's going to be taken care of for you. And it can lead to a lot of bitterness when that's not the case. And you have to really hustle to kind of find your way.
Absolutely.
What about, we talked about this briefly, but I just want to touch on one more time, if there's any weaknesses that come to mind beyond, you know, we talked about earlier, the acronyms and the speech, anything else that someone listening should be aware of that's going to be something they're going to need to overcome that they might not have had exposure to in the military or might not be aware of as a weakness that they'll need to overcome in their civilian career?
Well, again, I think for the younger folks, those that are getting out as junior officers or you know, younger, you know, enlisted types, that really, as I said, I think it's just learning to kind of speak the right speech and kind of to deprogram yourself in certain ways is really the key thing. I think for those that are getting out later in their careers, there is a certain kind of expectation that you have a certain business understanding and business wherewithal. So, you know, in these cases, more formal training, even MBAs, as one example, I think become ever more important for that type of transition.
That's great. Well, I always like to keep the last question more open-ended and just say, you know, you've provided so much value in terms of sharing your story and your advice. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to share with listeners?
Well, I think the main thing is just to go back to, you know, it's been, a long time since I served in the Navy, and I served for a little less than 6 years. And so to think back in terms of how it fits into my larger professional career, it seems like such a small part, but it plays such an outsized role today. I am so glad that I had the opportunity to serve in the Navy. I didn't even think about it as necessarily a service back then. I thought I was just having an adventure. But today, I'm far more appreciative of that. And I feel that for those that didn't take that opportunity, they may have missed something if they had an inclination. As I said, many people are really interested in kind of my service story. I'm always happy to tell it. I'm always happy to hear others. It's a currency as you connect with other prior military, ex-military. That's one of the first things you'll say. In fact, I was just in a meeting with a former rear admiral. And so it's hard to imagine a former lieutenant, you know, at the same table with an admiral. But, you know, we've had a lot of fun experiences to kind of share those different naval experiences that we both had. And it's a point of connection, and it's something you'll be very prideful of for years to come.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I definitely share that sentiment. And I just remember when I was on active duty, it was so easy for me to take that for granted and not realize what an incredible experience that is. But, you know, even in the time I've had away, not only the experience in the military, but also the connection with the veteran community and how willing they are to help and how willing they are to, you know, take a phone call and just do whatever it is to further your cause. It's really powerful. And I think those are great parting words of wisdom.
Well, thank you, Justin. It's been great to share that experience. And, I just want to encourage all those who are thinking about moving on to the civilian world that it's definitely something that's doable. And even though it may not be a linear path, I'm sure that most of you will be very successful at doing so.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today, Rob.
Justin, thank you for your time.
Surface, surface, surface.
Thank you for listening. I wanted to just stick around for a couple minutes after this episode just to do a little bit of rehash and some of the things that stood out with me from my conversation with Rob. It's just so rare and impressive to talk with someone with his background who was at a specific point in history that's very singular, and to see his perspective and his experiences. And I thought his advice just overall and throughout was very, very balanced and spot on. I love, first of all, the thing that he said about taking risks. He talked about taking risks while you're young and while you can before you have too many financial burdens. And I definitely echo that of early in your career, being willing to take that gamble, join that startup that goes under, or take that career that's a little outside of your comfort zone. And you have that time to bounce back. You've heard me talk about Gary Vaynerchuk or Gary V on the show before. If you've listened to his content, you know he even talks about this when you're 50 years old. You're not too old. You've got any time, you've got 10 years that you can really devote to developing a skill set, to really getting good at something. It's never too late. And so I know that Rob, you know, it's kind of said in his example, he was getting out earlier and taking that risk. I believe that applies to anyone, even if you're getting out at that 20-year point. And you can take those risks if you're able to build up more of a financial buffer. If you're able to get more, you know, savings, it'll allow you to have the time to either look for that ideal job or take a risk and do a job that doesn't pan out, or supplement your income while you're taking that job that you really want. It was awesome hearing those early days of AOL, and I love how Rob talked about being a sponge that just soaked up information. And, you know, he talked about seeing if he could just stick around and knowing how competitive it was and how high growth it was and how new it was, but just soaking up as much knowledge as he could. I think that's just great advice for every career. I also thought it was interesting, you know, in the context of working at AOL, how he said that a lot of the people around him didn't have tons of experience. They were inventing this whole new thing. And I think that's exciting for, you know, I think you can do this in probably many different industries or types of companies, but it could be very interesting for a veteran to join a company where there isn't yet an extreme amount of experience or a rule book to learn. And by joining some new industry or some new company, it might level the playing field in some ways and really play to your strength of being able to be disciplined and work hard. I appreciated Rob's story about failure at good and just the personal impact of failure. I love how he talked about how it is kind of glamorous today in startup culture to talk about failure, but hearing that personal impact and just the bruised pride that goes along with that, it's harder to live through those things. And I really appreciate the way that Rob put that. And then I love how, you know, in these last two jobs that he's had, just talking about remaining creative and innovative. And the quote that he said was, you know, you cannot be burnt out. If you're burnt out, you're not doing favors to anyone. If you can't run at a reasonable pace, you have to be an endurance athlete. And I think that's great. I know so many people have talked about work-life balance. It's something I'm still trying to figure out how to talk about for the show, and reading books about that or related to that, because I know that comes up so often from listeners. But I do like that thought that no matter what you do, especially if you need to remain creative and innovative, which, by the way, I think everyone in every career path has to today. It's so vital to make sure that you're able to take care of yourself, take care of your family, and approach things as a marathon rather than just a sprint. And the final thing is, I'll say, is I really liked what he said about the high regard he's had for the people he's worked with, and that they work just as hard as people in the military. And I'm not sure if I was able to eloquently get my point across on that. I definitely agree. I think it's just a great thing to remember that, I think that my experience in the military, I had a little bit of a derogatory view towards a lot of civilians in thinking that they had this cush lifestyle and that I was just going to be easily able to run laps around them. And it hasn't been true at all in my experience. And I think that in many ways that mindset has you underestimate the people you're working with and underestimate the people that sometimes you're competing with. And that's never a recipe for success. So thanks for listening. If these after-the-episode recaps are helpful, let me know. Send me an email, justin@beyondtheinformed.io, or leave a comment in the comment section. And if you have time for that, you have time for a 20-second review on iTunes. Would be greatly, greatly appreciated, unless you give it a 1-star review, in which case, save your 20 seconds, please. Have a great week, and I will be back next week with more stories from military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.